Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 156 of Unblocking Crypto. Ow, holy cow. A lot has happened in the past week.
Big week. It's a big week for sure. I got a page of notes here.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know where to start, but I know one of the things that I'm excited about is SAB 121 was finally repealed.
Good place to start.
Yeah, it's nice for that to happen. I think for those people that don't remember what that is, it is forcing banks, if they want to custody crypto, to also hold a one-to-one in cash or U.S. treasuries, right? So it's, I almost look at it as if you wanted to get a loan for your house, they'd give you a loan as long as you held that much of the loan in the bank at the same time. Like, it just, it makes no sense. So it was just being a really drag on innovation and growth in the economy. So that's excited that that got passed or repealed, I should say.
No, I think this might be the biggest deal of the last week as far as what it means for the large scale adoption of Bitcoin going forward, because you have the banks, which several of which have been itching to get into Bitcoin and have exposure as into Bitcoin as a something to offer their customers. But so you're going to have another marketing team for Bitcoin. Like the ETFs, when they got in, they became a sales and marketing for Bitcoin. And now you're going to have banks doing that. And I was thinking about it while I was driving the other day. And every once in a while, because I'm into real estate, I'll move money into an account in order to buy something, or I'll sell something and, you know, kind of a big number shows up in my checking account. And if it sits there too long, the bank calls me and they're like, hey, you have a large account size. We wanted to talk to you about, you know, what we could do for investing and what we offer from this and that. And I'm like, no, I'm good. I just haven't moved it yet. You know, I don't need your help, but thank you. But basically they're warning you that, hey, you have dollars sitting in an account and that's bad. Well, if you have a Bitcoin savings account with that bank, they're never going to call you and be like, hey, you got a lot of Bitcoin sitting here. The only thing they'd be is like, great, this guy's got a lot of Bitcoin sitting here. It can sit here for as long as he wants. And it's only going to go up on a large enough time scale. And so it's kind of funny to think about what that would mean for some people that just, they have no desire to go to Coinbase and self-custody. Maybe they don't have their own brokerage account. They don't do their own stock trades, you know, but man, if you have a checking account, you're, you know, that's the minimum level of banking that anybody has. So this kind of exposes the lower socioeconomic people to having access to Bitcoin here that don't want to go through Coinbase and stuff like that. So to me, it's opening the door to another pool of money that's out there to get exposure to Bitcoin. And that's good for Bitcoin, and it's good for the people that that don't have any yet.
Yeah, to me, it's kind of that concept of the long tail, right? I mean, most of your companies are really focused on that beginning first huge chunk of customers, and nobody really focuses on the long tail. And if you could do that and make it easy for them to buy, I mean, a lot of these companies out there, companies like River, you can't buy less than $100 of crypto at a time, right? So it's not convenient for somebody that says, oh, I just want to go put $5 or $10 into my Bitcoin stash, right? It's just, it doesn't work that way with a lot of these companies. And this theoretically could change that.
Right. And, you know, it depends on how serious these banks get about using Lightning Network and being able to buy small amounts of Bitcoin or doing dollar cost averaging or, you know, automatic payments and automatic conversions into Bitcoin. There's, you know, if I'm sure Jack Mallers will be, you know, the kind of the blueprint on how to do the small scale buying, because, you know, you don't want to do an on-chain payment for every single purchase, but you can do these batch payments and reduce the transaction cost per person as long as they're okay to wait a little while for that conversion. So to me, I can't wait to see where this goes. But for the most part, this is just going to go from, it's normal to hear the word Bitcoin now to it's normal to hold Bitcoin.
Well, I mean, you look at the Morgan Stanley CEO, and he's already come out and said he's open to working with the regulators to offer crypto services in a safe way, right? I mean, so you have huge asset companies that want to do more of this. And I think that's still just the tip of the spear, right? I mean, there's a lot more coming, I would hope, right? The ETFs have definitely started a lot of these guys saying, okay, we want to be a part of this. Now, if they could not only be a part of the ETFs, but also be a part of custodying Bitcoin for the long tail, then that would be really intriguing for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, when's the last time the banks got something new like this, right? I mean, ATMs came out in my lifetime. So where you went from having to talk to a human every time to you could go through a machine. Was that the last banking innovation that that made any sort of a difference? Maybe.
Depositing your checks by phone.
So yeah, mobile deposit's probably a good one too. That's a good call.
Yeah. Well, so let's keep talking about some of the executive orders, because Trump finally put his first crypto executive order out. It's dubbed Strengthening American Leadership in Digital Financial Technology. It's pretty much introducing a federal task force to regulate and promote innovation in cryptocurrency markets. Among its primary objectives, one of the few things that I saw that it did was establishing a federal task force to oversee the cryptocurrency regulations, which will ensure consumer protection while encouraging innovation, promote the development of the U.S. dollar-backed stablecoins as a counterweight to other digital assets, which signals the country's intent to maintain dominance in global financial markets, prohibits the introduction of a U.S. CBDC, central bank digital currency, and then explores a reserve system for cryptocurrencies acquired through enforcement actions, signaling an openness to integrating digital assets into government financial systems, which that last one to me is probably the most exciting one. I know it's going to take a little bit longer than I think what everybody had hoped, but it's still a path to having some sort of strategic crypto reserve, at least in the US. And we talked last week about Bhutan had already done that, right? So we're not the first. Hopefully we're not the last.
Yeah. So I went through and kind of read this and thought about it, and Bitcoin Twitter was super upset with Trump on several lines. But, you know, he didn't pardon Ross Ulbricht on day one, but he did it on Tuesday. He was inaugurated on Monday, and Ross was pardoned on Tuesday. So, but they were really upset about that. And I'm like, man, that might be a little impatient. And then with this, there's some really good stuff in here. It protects and promotes the ability to deploy software, mine, validate, transact, and self-custody digital assets. Like, that's a really good line. Yeah. Because self-custody has been under attack under the last 4 years, and that was a huge deal. And nobody's really talking about the fact that there's protections for that built into this. The promoting dollar-backed stablecoins, to me, in combination with prohibiting CBDCs, like, that's like about as optimistic as you can get on that side. The government's not viewing stable coins as an attack on the dollar. They're viewing it as, hey, we can get more people globally on the dollar. And as long as those stable coins are backed by treasuries, dollars, or, you know, something similar in order to peg the stable coin, then it's okay. That's a good thing, right? I mean, we all know as stable coins go up, Bitcoin adoption goes up, because you're already kind of in that crypto world of getting into wallets and transactions and using QR codes and all of those things. So, and to me, that's really good. In there was protecting and promoting fair and open banking access. So Chokepoint 2.0 is implied that that's going to come to an end. They don't say it outright, but that's what it is. And then a technology neutral regulatory clarity, which is right in line with what you want, right? You're not going to get something that says, hey, Bitcoin is this. We're going to do this for Bitcoin, this for Bitcoin, this for Bitcoin. The governments just don't do that. They say, you know, their decision there is to clear the way for the market. And then the market determines who the winners are. They don't pick the winners. Now, maybe I should say they're not supposed to pick the winners. So when I read through this legislation, as a Bitcoin guy, yeah, I don't like to see the fact that it's open to digital assets, and it's not a strategic Bitcoin stockpile or strategic Bitcoin reserve. It's a national digital asset stockpile. But quite frankly, I don't know what else they could have done. I mean, it would have been, you know, El Salvador level to go straight into, it's got to be Bitcoin, Bitcoin only. But for them to open it up and say, yeah, it's a digital assets, here's a working group, you guys determine what assets are going to go in it, which ones can handle it and all that. I mean, look at the market caps. $2 trillion market cap for Bitcoin. Ethereum's like a couple hundred billion. It can't be a strategic reserve. It's not big enough. So, you know, XRP is the one I keep hearing that they're lobbying and trying to get in and everything else. Like, they're under $100 billion market cap. They don't have a chance of being a strategic. I mean, that's like, you just, it doesn't make sense. It's too small. Well, the U.S. government's not going to buy $50 million of anything. Like, that's, you know, it doesn't move the needle. So I will say, I think that strategic stockpile is opened up the competition between crypto and Bitcoin to be treated more seriously on a high level, like a government level and you know, we've seen a lot of ETF applications, a lot of crypto stuff going into through the SEC trying to get into the stock market. So this cycle feels like it's going to be Bitcoin versus crypto. And so there's going to be a lot of battling and infighting and a lot of wasted energy that way. And, you know, because I'm always looking for like, all right, are we going to ramp up again and then drop like a rock? And if we do, and maybe it's because we ramp up, everybody thinks we're going to get a strategic stockpile and all this stuff. And they're like, no, these guys are jerks, man. This industry is not ready. We can't treat them seriously. We're not going to adopt any digital assets for this stockpile. And then bang, there's the trap door. And, you know, the price plummets across the board. You know, it's about the only thing I can see that's, you know, that would be bad for Bitcoin at this point. But it's definitely brought a lot of tokens and cryptocurrency organizations back into the question of, will they be treated similar to Bitcoin? Because currently I don't see any of them really being treated similar to Bitcoin. But if you're the government and all these people, all the Bitcoin people complaining that it's not a Bitcoin reserve, you know, Bhutan doesn't have only Bitcoin on the balance sheet, right? They've got multiple other digital assets. And so to me, this is not a bad thing. It will be bad if nothing is included in the strategic reserve or a stockpile. It would be bad if Bitcoin's 20% of what they adopt into a stockpile. But I can't see them doing anything other than like almost all Bitcoin and maybe some other stuff.
What I like about this is that they're looking at everything from a digital assets perspective, right? I mean, if you look at the strategic reserves of the United States today, gold is a part of that, but there's also 30 other precious metals that are a part of that too. They don't have the same amount of gold, but they're still in there. So like we've talked about before with, I think it's Grayscale that does their large cap growth fund, 90% of that fund is Bitcoin and Ethereum, right? So a majority of it should be Bitcoin, maybe a little bit of Ethereum if they believe that Ethereum makes sense to do or not. But at least they're open-minded enough to say, okay, well, let's take a look at everything to make sure this is the right thing to do. I agree with you on a lot of things, especially I'm sure you saw the video by Jack Mallers talking about Ripple and how they're actively lobbying for the Bitcoin to stop the Bitcoin strategic reserve. And that's a whole other subject, right? Hopefully we don't have private companies that are kind of screwing this up for everybody, which is what kind of Ripple seems to be doing. I mean, you do have David Sacks in there, who we'll call him the AI and crypto czar, right? That he pretty much said he expects the US to catch up to other countries like Singapore very quickly. And a lot of that is because you're going to focus on three main areas. And the first one being market structure, which is really defining what a security, what a commodity is, what a digital asset is, what's collectible. The stable coins is a second one. A lot of that is to extend the U.S.'s dominance. I mean, you look at stable coins, it was $30 trillion in payments last year that was used to pay off in stable coins. And then the third one is the national stockpile of digital assets, right? So, and he even called the Trump meme coin a collectible. He said it's just like NFTs and baseball cards, right? But he said, this is also my personal opinion. This is not a government thing, right? I feel like at least we have somebody that's level-headed and headed in the right direction. I guess time will tell what actually happens with this. And they have, 6 months to work through all this, I think, is the expectation. So I'm excited to see what happens. And at least we're actually getting momentum in a direction that seems favorable right now.
Yeah, and you talk about that 6 months. That's another thing. It's 180 days. They're going to provide a report back that has regulatory and legislative proposals and all the stuff in it. And Biden did the same thing, but his was like, find everything wrong with Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and how it's bad for the environment. This one's like, just tell me how the United States needs to pass laws and regulations in order to make this thing work. But it's 180 days from January, puts it in July, like that, you know, that late 2025, if you're looking at Bitcoin cycles and all that stuff, the timing kind of works out pretty good for that. Plus, by then, you know, you're talking about, we're right now at 12 months from the launch of the ETFs, and a lot of the big money guys still haven't approved the ETFs, and they're still not allocated to the ETFs. So over the next 6 months, you know, we've got all of the makings of a pretty crazy bull run.
Yeah. So on top of the U.S. government doing this, the SEC has formed their own task force, which is led by Hester Peirce, which I think everybody pretty much knows her as the crypto mom at this point. Yep. But their goal is really to strike a more collaborative tone with the crypto firms, right? So we've never said anything like that about the SEC. It's been the exact opposite. They've been trying to regulate by enforcement forever at this point. So I'm excited that this is happening. I'm excited that Hester Peirce is leading this up, because she seems to be one of the most level-headed people in the SEC. So that will be really cool to see what happens with that as well.
Yeah, I agree. There's just so much pro crypto, or at least like, hey, we need to get this sorted out. Like, we, you know, you step into a new job, the previous guy is super unorganized, and you sit down and you're like, first things first, we gotta unshuffle these cards and get this laid out so that, you know, I can see a path. And I think that's where they're at. I hope that's where they're at, because, you know, I mean, it's been real clumsy. Like, regulation by enforcement means they're just shooting holes in the wall, you know, trying to hit rats crawling around. It's like, now we just have a wall with a bunch of holes. We got to figure out what, you know, where our real problems are. So to me, like, this is more, I mean, as far as politicians and campaign promises go, this is really good. Yeah. I mean, most of the time you hear about that stuff and then it's like, no new taxes. Here's your new taxes. You can keep your doctor. Your doctor is not on your plan anymore. You know, it's like campaign promises are actually the opposite of what you get. And these are definitely not the opposite of what we were talking, right? Is a national digital asset stockpile the opposite of a Bitcoin stockpile? No. It's just a little more broad. And honestly, that's the only thing throughout here that I see as something to even quasi complain about. You know, if these guys are Bitcoin only, you know, Bitcoin maximal, they're like 100% of their net worth in Bitcoin. And it's like, no one else is like you. You can't expect these guys to just be on a Bitcoin standard just because you voted for them.
Well, it doesn't mean that they won't choose Bitcoin only. It just means that they're looking at it all, right? I mean, so it's almost great that they're being open-minded to this. And I mean, we talked about David Sacks kind of owning the AI side too. One of the interesting pieces of information that came out on AI was DeepSeek. I don't know if you paid much attention to this, but China's AI startup that has pretty much surpassed OpenAI and ChatGPT and done it at a 30th of the price. What's interesting about this, and I think how it kind of relates back to crypto and Bitcoin, is that it's being done on completely open source technology, right? So it is not being really controlled by these centralized organizations like OpenAI controls their model for AI, right? Now this is, they're taking what actually Meta did, and they improved on it and they made it even better. So if you take that sort of concept and say, all right, if decentralized is going to be much better than centralized, something like Bitcoin that isn't governed by any one country is now going to be something that everybody is going to want to be a part of because it's fair and equal for everybody involved.
Yeah, it was on my radar because everything crashed. Bitcoin crashed first because it was the only market open. And then when the markets opened, everything was crashing and Nvidia took a huge hit. And, you know, in my head, I'm like, hey, guys, remember when Evergrande was a big deal and it was going to crash the global market because the commercial real estate in China was over and it was a huge problem? Like, you know, everybody freaks out. And so I just kept looking at them like, man, I wish I could free up some funds and take advantage of these people freaking out, because I don't believe everything I hear from China. Maybe they did it for cheaper. Maybe they just are lying. Maybe they have more GPUs that or CPUs or whatever they're using, to more NVIDIA chips and machines running in the background, and they just aren't being truthful, and it's actually twice as expensive as what we do. Who knows? Maybe it's not as good. Well, I mean, it's out of China, so you can't ask it some questions, right? That they're not going to allow that. So we'll see. I mean, it's open source, so if it is better, then our guys pull in the code and work with it and improve on it, and you know, we're back in business. So, but yeah, it is interesting because they're talking about, you know, in the tens of millions of dollars range, and our guys are talking about the hundreds of billions of dollars range.
Yeah,
it's a huge difference when you talk about the ability to deploy these things. So yeah, give it to me. Too much AI too fast, it could be super bad as far as the economy and people getting fired and new jobs not being created fast enough. So, you know, that's maybe not great, but you know, it's kind of AI and Bitcoin are kind of similar. Like, you're not going to stop it. You know, it's going to keep going and it's going to keep proceeding. Too many people are interested and it's too accessible. So to me, like, we'll just see where this goes.
Well, it's one of those things. I believe that you should be educating yourself on Bitcoin and crypto, right? I also think you should be educating yourself on AI. These things aren't going away. So for a lot of people, I hear stories all the time where they just don't understand how easy it is to manipulate something in AI to get to save hours or days of your time. And they don't even look into it. They're just like, oh, well, I didn't even know you could do that. But I don't even know how to do that. So I'm not going to do it. And it's just crazy. If you could increase your efficiency, then the GDP is going to raise dramatically and everybody's life is going to be a lot better if you can figure out how to do that.
Yeah, I mean, and the people that figure it out the fastest can create and provide tools for people that don't want to learn it, so that AI does the work, but it feels like a website, or, you know, it feels like a digital personal assistant, and you don't have to train the AI if you're not that kind of person. But you just pay $10 a month and now you have a virtual personal assistant. So whenever you need to book a flight, you just ask it, hey, I need to book a flight. How many points is it on this? And how, you know, versus what are the flights and how much does it cost? And then it just gives you all the answers instead of you having to go look and compare.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And I guess this is kind of happening because I guess a big deal was there was an announcement from Trump that we were going to create this AI fund it with $500 billion, and OpenAI was going to be a big piece of that, and Oracle and SoftBank and stuff like that. And so if something can be done at a lot cheaper, then that's fantastic. I think Elon Musk was not a fan of that entire announcement just because he's not really a fan of OpenAI and having it be behind a closed door rather than being more open source. But he did talk about the Doge and what they're looking to really leverage blockchain technology to help slash government expenses, right? So monitoring federal outlays, shielding US data against bad actors, payment processing, managing properties, all that kind of stuff. So it's exciting to hear that blockchain is gonna be a piece of that. Now the question is, which blockchain? I know that Charles Hoskinson with Cardano did reach out and say he's happy to help out with Cardano since it's US based, it has a constitution. I think the other US based ones are Solana and Hedera, so there are also possibilities too. But I saw the stat, maybe we've talked about this before, but IMF says that the total global government debt is $102 trillion right now, and more than that. And CZ even came out and proposed that all the governments should track their spending on the blockchain. He said it's called public spending for a reason. So that would be amazing if we could be one of the first countries that actually does that and everybody can see where we're spending our money.
I mean, I think that would hold some of these bureaucrats accountable. I mean, there's $40 billion that was allocated to internet access for rural areas that has not connected anybody to the internet. And nobody cares. Nobody sees it unless you hear about it. It's not a problem. It's $40 billion, which is a lot of money. Oh, it's $100 per person as far as tax dollars go. But like the government doesn't really care. The people in the program don't really care. It's a rounding error for the government, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah. But if that $40 billion goes on a line item that people can see, maybe they take a little more seriously, and maybe Starlink is available for these people instead of them trying to figure out another way to do it. The same with that EV charging stations that was another $30 billion that have eight charging stations now. Like, it's only $30 billion, you know, we spend trillions, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, if people are looking at $30 billion and then they're like, who's in charge of this? Oh, it's this guy. Okay, well, this guy sucks. You know, then now you got some skin in the game, like if you're working for a business instead of for the government. So I'm all for it. I think that you could improve government efficiency just by having some accountability. You know, without firing anybody, you could just get them to do better work. I do think that the return to work and no more remote work for government employees is going to cut the headcount. I think some people just drop out of it. Especially, I think a lot of people are working two jobs anyway and just getting paid by the federal government, so they'll just drop one of them.
Especially with the amount of money that federal government employees are paid. Like, if you're not having to go to the office and you're getting paid an insane amount of money, that's ridiculous. Did you see the penny cost 3 cents to make? So that was one of Musk's first things that he wanted to look at, is eliminating manufacturing the penny. So
our New Year's resolution in 2007 was to never take another penny home. And so I'm on year 17 of having no pennies. It works fine. I think it's after 17 years, I'm pretty sure that we don't even need pennies anymore. There's actually there's a dollarized country that did away with the penny. And so they just either round up or round down to the 5 cents, nearest 5 cents. And all the merchants found that it just works out, like, because of the variability of the end price of things. Half of them end up rounding up into their favor and half end up rounding down into the favor of the customer. And so at the end of the year, you're off, you know, maybe you're off by less than 0.1% or something, you know, dramatically insignificant.
Interesting. Well, let's talk about MicroStrategy.
It's MicroStrategy corner time, because there's a lot going on there too.
Yeah. So we're at last minute last week, they kind of bought that a little over $1 billion of Bitcoin. And then within a week, they did another 1.1 billion of buys, right? So now they're at 471,000 Bitcoin,
yep.
Which is amazing. They are planning to offer 2.5 million of the perpetual strike preferred stock, which is a lot. And then they just got voted, got approved to increase their Class A shares by 30x. So 330 million shares to 10.3 billion. So that gives them a lot more firepower to raise money to buy more Bitcoin. Like, it's insane the amount of money that they're going to be dumping into Bitcoin here pretty soon, considering they've already, they're over 50 billion at this point of Bitcoin already.
Yeah. So diving into the perpetual preferred stocks, I don't know anything about these. So I had to like read and try to understand it. It's pretty slick because, you know, Michael Saylor, it seems like he's like, okay, I can sell stock. There's people that will buy stock that won't buy Bitcoin. So I'll open the doors to this pool of money. And then he's like, okay. And then you got all of these options. Because of my volatility, I got tons of money coming in on the option side and the hedge side. Then the convertible notes roll around. Oh, and then the debt rolls around. So he's like, okay, I can get debt. And now, you know, these creditors have access to Bitcoin exposure. And then the convertible notes roll around and he's got access to this bond market that doesn't have access to Bitcoin any other way. And now he's got this 8% dividend preferred stock with $1,000 strike price, and it's an uncapped perpetual call option. So you're talking about like opening the doors to pensions and people that love dividends and things like that, because you don't really see dividend bearing stocks that are Bitcoin proxies, because Bitcoin doesn't spin off cash flow. And so this is neat. I'm not really seeing why it's not going to work at this point. He and his team are pretty sophisticated on building these tools and launching these programs. And so, I mean, it's preferred stock, not common stock. So, you know, you've got advantages as far as if there's a liquidation, and you got advantages. I mean, the dividends are coming to you first. You know, you can convert it into common stock if there's the upside. You know, there is upside potential, even though, you know, you're not getting the common stock volatility. So they don't want common stock volatility, right? If they did, they'd buy it, but they're able to get dividends. And so to me, like, it's just another way for them to tap into a pool of liquidity to turn it into Bitcoin and bolster their balance sheet. And they're so far ahead of everybody else right now that it's shocking. You know, some of these other companies are just now starting their convertible note, you know, soiree into that field. So once they get that figured out, maybe they jump into this too. Maybe they don't, because like, not everybody's Michael Saylor, and seemingly makes a whole lot of calls for this company. I mean, this is not a group of 10 to 100 people are not making these decisions, right? There's no group of 10 people that have this risk tolerance. And so not a lot of companies are going to be able to do this. So if Bitcoin does what we think it's going to do, MicroStrategy's in an incredible position.
Well, what was the other thing that he did? They had just over $1 billion in debt that was coming due in 27. And they were, I guess, paid that off and gave
converted those people convertible. It was a convertible note that they went ahead and converted out. And so when they do that, this is the stuff that like almost doesn't even make sense. So the lender on those convertible notes hedges. So as soon as they provide that note, they sell effectively call options and generate 70-80% of the money they deposited in the note anyway. So when they convert those shares, there's already a short against them. So it's almost a wash. And so to me, it's like, you're not diluting all of the shares, like $1 billion worth of shares. 700, 800 million have already been bought. So it's kind of an interesting thing when they do that, because what does it do? Well, it opens them up to get another note and buy more Bitcoin. And they paid it off with stock, and the stock's already has already been shorted when they first issued the note. It's financial engineering stuff that's over my head for sure. But on the I get the basics, because you know, if they issue enough shares to pay off $1 billion in stock, you should be able to feel that in the stock price, and that you don't feel it because it's not actually being sold. So this look, man, after this call, I'm going to go close on a couple of duplexes, and I'm going to use MicroStrategy and maybe MSTY, the yield bearing synthetic call ETF thing, to try to replace the income from those, and like selling covered calls on MicroStrategy because they're so volatile. I think I can do it fairly easily. And then if I get called away, then I'll just pour the money into MSTY for a month so that I don't get hit with a walk sale. So I'm going to just try that, and I'll let you know how it goes. But you know, as long as you have confidence that Bitcoin's kind of pegged to 100,000, and you know, it's more likely to go up than down, to me, these moves to generate cash make sense in the next 6-9 months. And then there's no telling, you know, what happens if we go through the hyperbolic price increase and then the drop and all of those things, then yeah, MicroStrategy's price is going to get yanked around. But you know, if we're in this environment that we're in now in a trading range for Bitcoin, then generating cash is not a bad move.
Yeah, what's crazy is that, I mean, those people that have the convertible notes, they got over 100% premium on those. And now MicroStrategy has no real debt outstanding until 2028. So they got like 3 years to not have to worry about anything. And all they're about to do is just get a crap ton of cash in and buy some more Bitcoin. And theoretically, we're about to have a bull market that should be amazing, especially if this strategic reserve happens. Then it's just, it's going to be a wild ride.
Yeah. And then, you know, we mentioned it, they're going from 330 million shares outstanding to they can now issue 10 billion more shares. So as Bitcoin buying opportunities present themselves and the stock price allows, they're going to buy more and issue these new shares and buy more Bitcoin. So, you know, that's another reason why I kind of like the covered call strategy or the MSTY stuff, is because if the price starts to go run up, they're going to issue shares and buy Bitcoin. So you kind of, if price is in its trading range, great. So get in the options game and collect premiums, you know, because the stock price itself isn't going up in dollar terms, but the value in Bitcoin is. there is no other stock like this. Like you, and not only that, if you don't understand Bitcoin, you're so far away from understanding MicroStrategy and how to use it. I don't pretend to be really good at this stuff, but it definitely, as long as Bitcoin holds up and something freaky doesn't happen with MicroStrategy, there's a lot of games to be played here that a small number of people are able to play.
Yeah, no, it is way over my head too. It is super exciting to think about what is happening. I almost view MicroStrategy as a leveraged Bitcoin ETF, although it's starting to have the ability of like a bond with dividend and all that kind of stuff too, right? So it is way more competitive or just different than anything else out in the market right now. But speaking of Bitcoin ETFs, there are seven companies that now have filed to allow for in-kind redemptions as well, right? So that's a huge piece of information too that I feel like nobody's talking about, because now you could eliminate that tax consequence from going to and from cash and going in and out of the ETFs. And if you look at the Bitcoin ETFs, they've had a pretty record year so far, and we're only just under 4 weeks in. So they've already had over $4.2 billion of inflows, which is 6% of all the ETF flows across the board. Like, that's insane.
there's hunger out there for Bitcoin, man. And like Michael Saylor knows it, and that's why he's doing what he's doing to go allow avenues for money to flow. And I mean, the ETFs, I mean, it's just, they're the easiest thing to buy. You know, I mean, everybody's into ETFs. All of the institutions have ETFs. So it's not weird. You know, it's not, it doesn't have the feel of going to an exchange and buying Bitcoin and having a custody and wallets and all that. So the ETFs are not going to slow down. They're going to collect more inflows this year than they did last year. I feel like it's on. You know, and until something else happens, it's going to be on.
Yeah. So speaking of MicroStrategy, there is somebody else that is somewhat following in their footsteps. Another NASDAQ listed company, a real estate firm called Fathom Holdings. They have voted to spend more than half of their excess cash reserves to buy Bitcoin for a strategic reserve. So that's exciting. We talked about how many public companies are we going to see at the end of this year that hold Bitcoin, and chalk it up, we got another one that's coming, right? So it's good to see that.
And not only that, Fold, of the Fold card, they just got, their path is cleared for becoming listed publicly. So I think they're within 30 days, I think, of being listed. So they already have 1,000 Bitcoin on the balance sheet and a profitable fiat business. So once they come on board, there'll be another one. And 1,000 Bitcoin puts you in kind of a rare air as far as Bitcoin holdings and corporate things, but they're not a big company yet. So there'll be another one.
Yeah, that'll be exciting to see. The other thing that I did see too, in terms of regulation, this isn't related to Bitcoin, but there was a federal court in Texas that ruled against the U.S. Treasury again, saying that it overstepped its authority by sanctioning the decentralized crypto mixer Tornado Cash. And this is now the second time that the Treasury has been defeated. I think last November, the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court ruled that the Treasury overstepped its authority. And this case will now go back to the district court for further proceedings based on the Texas's court's interpretation. So that's exciting to see. It's kind of a little win for privacy at the same time, too. Shows that smart contracts are immutable. There's not much you can do about it.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not so caught up in that because I'm kind of mixed. You know, with creating pools in the cryptocurrency world that appear to allow nefarious actions to be covered up is kind of a tricky thing, because I'm not like a total crypto junkie that, you know, I'm trying to figure out how this will work in the real world. I mean, one of the biggest things that the government is using against the cryptocurrency world is, you know, money laundering and things like that. And like a Tornado Cash mixer type of thing allows them to fight it more easily. And so while I think it should be okay, I mean, if I've got cash, I can trade out cash. I can go to a bank and trade out cash or get change for my hundreds. And it's basically a mixer. So I don't know. I don't know that I feel strongly enough either way, because I like the idea of being able to do it, but I don't like how much of an attack vector that allows, like, the anti-crypto army types to attack the industry. So I'm mixed on that, is basically what I want
to
say.
Like, to me, I think the problem is, I mean, I wish it wasn't a problem. I guess I should start with saying that. But when you look at what happened in Canada with the truckers, like, if you donated Bitcoin to anybody that was a part of that trucker, whatever that you called that, then your banking was shut down. Right. So if there are certain things that you want to donate to that you don't want people to know about it, then something like this is nice to be able to do it somewhat privately, like you could do with cash. Right. So yes, it can be used nefariously. Cash can be used nefariously too. So, I mean, if we're trying to prevent bad things from happening, then we're going to struggle to do anything, right? We're going to go back to, like, trading in stones or something like that, right? So it's, I mean, it sucks that it has to happen, but I do like the ability to have privacy and not have everybody know what you're doing at all times.
Oh yeah, I definitely like it. I just, you know, I'm not 100% on one side. I can see the other, but it would be nice to have that mixer capability, because quite frankly, if I have Bitcoin that can get traced back to something nefarious, then the government could justifiably just capture mine or come after me for Bitcoin, because 17 transactions ago it was involved in a drug deal or something. So I don't know. I don't know that I've even thought enough about this, but it's an interesting thing, and I'm certainly favorable to being able to do it. But, I mean, but here's the thing, man. If 90% of the government is neutral to positive for crypto, then this doesn't matter. The 10% can squawk about it all they want, and it's not going to matter to me. So maybe it's time for me to have a little bit of confidence in the fact that we have so many pro-crypto people in Washington now.
Yeah. Well, speaking of things getting banned, Brazil just banned WorldCoin, so they can no longer give out tokens for eye scans down there, which is kind of exciting to hear, because I think we've been talking about that for a while. WorldCoin's been struggling for a little while now, too. They're starting to see a lot of countries say, iris scans are not okay.
Yeah, I'm glad iris scans are not okay.
Yeah. Another thing that was, it caught my eye, and I mean, I know we've heard it over and over again, but it seems like it's becoming more and more popular. One of the founders of Ledger, which is one of the cold wallets, was kidnapped from his home in France by six men and a woman, both him and his wife, and they requested a very large cryptocurrency ransom to the friends and family. It looks like those seven were arrested after the two being held captive for about 24 hours. And it was a pretty big manhunt, but this is becoming more and more consistent, where if you have any sort of crypto, then someone's probably trying to find a way to get that out of you through torture, which is
crazy. Yeah. No thanks. No, don't need that.
Yeah. So outside of Bitcoin, there were some interesting things that I did see. Uniswap version 4 is going live this week. One of the things that it does differently is that it's allowing for the creation of highly customizable pools. And what's crazy, if you look at the number of tokens today, we're at 36 million crypto tokens. The expectation is that for almost to triple and go to, or to triple and go to 100 million by the end of the year. Considering when you and I kind of got into this and the whole 17 and 18 alt season, there were less than 3,000 tokens. The bull run before that, back in 13 and 14, there were less than 500 tokens. So the numbers have gone crazy. If you can find the right ones out of those 36 million, congratulations, you just won a lottery ticket. But for most people, they should probably not spend very much money trying to do that.
Even if you pick the right one, you have to sell it at the right time. And because if you miss the window, then you're back to a losing lottery ticket. It's pretty wild. I can't remember, maybe it was a million new tokens a week or something to that effect. And then not only that, when you talk about 3,000 tokens back in 1718, you could get to three of those really easily through Coinbase. After that, it was tricky to get go onto Poloniex or whatever exchange and get into the other maybe 100 or 200 or whatever. So the availability, it's just easy to get to them too. So, I think that that sort of thing just keeps pulling all of the larger altcoins down towards all of the junk, and that separation between Bitcoin and everything else extends. So I think we're kind of in a battle between the government trying to pull some of the larger altcoins up into more comparable with Bitcoin, not based on use case, but based on being in the reserve or stockpile. But then you've got all of these clown coins, pulling everything else down with it. So perception wise. And so we'll see how it goes.
I read about one of the guys that made some money on the Trump meme coin. I think the first time it ran up from $1 to 23 or so, he made something like $22, $23 million, and then got in again when it was in the 50s, and it's come down, what, 70 something percent from its all-time high. Ended up losing like 8 or 9 million on that one. So I mean,
Stuff.
great. He's still up 12, $14 million, which is great, right? But man, it's like it is very volatile, that's for sure. So be careful.
Yeah, it's also incredibly unpredictable.
Yeah. So we talked about Ripple, and while I'm not a fan of them being part of the strategic reserve, they did get some good news that they have two new money transmitter licenses in a couple of key states, New York and Texas, which is kind of a big deal. I mean, those are two of the more important states in here in the US to have money transmitter licenses. That puts them at 55 globally and 33 in the US. So they're still trending in the right direction and moving to a point where they can be used for some of these banks to move things around if they need to. So there's still a kind of a question mark on my mind of, is something that's really decentralized or centralized like them a good thing or not? But they're definitely working to create a lot of partnerships in the banking industry that hopefully will make things a lot easier to move money in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, I still think of Ripple as the guys that paid Greenpeace $5 million to talk about how bad Bitcoin is for the environment. So I'm not super excited about them, but if they can provide some benefit to the real world using cryptocurrency, then there's some advantages there for everybody. So if it works, it works.
Yeah, well, I think that's all that I had on my end. What else did I miss? I know there's a bunch of stuff.
The only thing I have, we talked a lot about the government stuff and SEC, and the one thing we didn't mention was that Cynthia Lummis is now the chair of the Senate Banking Subcommittee for Digital Assets. So she's quite good, and so I think that'll pay dividends to have someone who's got their head on straight about digital assets and isn't brand new to them. So that's a good thing. So I feel like Washington's got a lot of good momentum. We'll see where it carries us.
Yeah, no, super exciting. I think the other thing that we didn't really talk about was there's a possibility that US-based crypto could have zero tax implications, which.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring that up because it just doesn't seem like it. It seems like something they'll float out there just to get a news splash, but I don't see it happening. Maybe it will, but it's that seems like a super long shot.
I just wanted to get to the two, three, four, $500 max, or anything under that, there is no tax implications. That I think would be huge. And whether they do it on a subset or whether they do it on all of it, I don't really care. But man, it would just make the GDP numbers look better if you can actually use this and not have to worry about paying a tax on a $10 lunch.
Yeah. Now, I would like to see a de minimis tax exemption because it shouldn't be a taxable event for me to repay my buddy $20 for buying me lunch because I was running late. That should be handing somebody a $20 bill. I don't know that that needs to be something I gotta file with my accountant.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of other things that we did miss, but this was a really exciting week, in my opinion, of everything that did happen. There's still a lot more that should happen in the next 6 to 12 months at the same time, too. So I think the next few weeks, few months are going to be exciting to talk about. And as we get to theoretically the top of the bull market, maybe at the end of this year, that will be exciting to talk about.
Yeah, I think this year is going to be as nuts as any year in Bitcoin and crypto.
Awesome. Well, Hal, looking forward to talking next week.
Awesome. Sounds good, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.